Spring is finally here, and it's that time of year when plans start becoming real. Trips are getting booked, the calendar is filling up, and the energy is shifting. Make this season count. By starting right now, you'll hit summer already feeling more confident speaking and understanding a brand new language. Whether you're prepping for a dream vacation, reconnecting with your family heritage, or just finally checking learn a new language off your bucket list, Rosetta Stone is the way to go. They've been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years because they skip the boring stuff. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists or leaning on chunky translations. Instead, their intuitive method helps you naturally absorb the language by connecting words and visuals to real-world meaning. It's about learning in context, the way language was actually meant to be learned. As a trusted expert with millions of users, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. It really is the ultimate tool for genuine growth. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/rs10 now and begin your language learning journey.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. Just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at GRUNS.co.
You're a pro at running your life, at committing to your workout, at showing up every day. At Bombas, we're pros too. Pros at making socks. Our sport assortment has specialized socks for whatever sport you're committed to. Running, hiking, golf, Pilates, and so much more. Made with sweat-wicking yarns, blister-fighting details, and targeted arch support. Bombas Sport is pro-level socks from the pros of socks. For another pro, you. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com and use code audio.
Good morning and welcome to the Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. It has continued to be kind of a bright, shiny, hot summer full of air from Canada that's smoky. And it all kind of clouds the political landscape here in Minnesota. This week was another with many small stories that are weaving themselves into an interesting 2026. On Monday, it broke that Eric Pratt, a state senator, will run in the congressional district being vacated by Angie Craig. Eric Pratt will join the program later. The other thing that I started to make a list of is 7 things in 2025 that will shape 2026. And we'll go through that list in the next segment. I'm Blois Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Spring is finally here, and it's that time of year when plans start becoming real. Trips are getting booked, the calendar is filling up, and the energy is shifting. Make this season count. By starting right now, you'll hit summer already feeling more confident speaking and understanding a brand new language. Whether you're prepping for a dream vacation, reconnecting with your family heritage, or just finally checking learn a new language off your bucket list, Rosetta Stone is the way to go. They've been the trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years because they skip the boring stuff. There's no memorizing random vocabulary lists or leaning on chunky translations. Instead, their intuitive method helps you naturally absorb the language by connecting words and visuals to real-world meaning. It's about learning in context, the way language was actually meant to be learned. As a trusted expert with millions of users, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. It really is the ultimate tool for genuine growth. Ready to start learning a new language this spring? Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 today to explore Rosetta Stone and choose the language that's right for you. Go to rosettastone.com/rs10 now and begin your language learning journey.
Summer routines live or die by how easy they are. And honestly, if something takes too much effort, I'm out. That's why Grunes is my go-to. It's one daily pack of gummies covering my greens, vitamins, and minerals. Plus, it has 6 grams of prebiotic fiber, which is more than 2 cups of broccoli. No mixing powders, no giant pills, no hassle. I just rip open the pack and I'm done. They taste good and it makes it easy to stay on top of my health, even when life gets busy. Save up to 52% off with code PODCAST at Grunes.co. That's code PODCAST at Grunes.co.
Thank you for calling the Bombas Comfort Line. Bombas make socks, slippers, tees, and underwear made with the highest quality materials. Press 1 for comfort, 2 for style, 3 for donation.
You chose style. Bombas has styles for whatever you enjoy. You can run in Bombas, lounge in Bombas, dress them up, dress them down, but always give back in Bombas. Because with every item purchased, another is donated. Bombas, comfort worth calling for. Go to bombas.com/audio and use code AUDIO for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code AUDIO.
Welcome back to Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. I made reference in the opening segment about Capital Security. Over the weekend, that has emerged as a very timely topic. There's a story out of KTTC that I'm going to play an excerpt of in a little bit. But there's also a story in the Star Tribune by Jeff Day and Ryan Faircloth. There's questions that need answers, and there's new systems that need to be put into place after the assassination of Melissa and Mark Hortman and the shooting of John and Yvette Hoffman. But not that any of that could have stopped Vance Bolter, but the idea that the Capital Security Committee itself hasn't met, will meet August 20th, there's a lot of things that I think the public wants to know about. Apparently there was a meeting last week. I'm working on the content with legislators about security. But my question is, who was there and why didn't the public know about it? Security is a major issue at the Capitol. We should have metal detectors installed. I've said that before. It works in D.C. It can work in St. Paul. But then late Saturday, a story broke that there was a man who allegedly had some mental health issues found disrobed in the Senate chamber on Friday night. When I try to get to the Capitol during the week after hours, I need a key card. So how did he get in? And more questions are going to continue to be raised until that August 20th meeting. Now, I want to play part of this story by Brock Berge from KTTC. He started investigating the Capital Security Committee, chaired by Lieutenant Governor Flanagan, after the assassinations. Here's an excerpt of what he found and the answers he got. Again, this is Brock Berge from KTTC in Rochester.
Yeah, that is a timely topic, to say the least. But a KTTC investigation prompted by the Minnesota lawmaker shootings finds statutory requirements of this committee are not being met. And that has state officials avoiding our months-long push for answers.
In a time when public information is easily accessible, and at a time when the public is seeking more information.
Tonight, with the suspect in custody and a safer environment for state lawmakers.
The lack of certain public information becomes more obvious. According to Minnesota statutes, the state's advisory committee on Capitol area security is required to submit a report to the governor, legislature, and Minnesota Supreme Court by January 15th of every year. The Department of Public Safety houses recent reports on its state website. DPS includes the Minnesota State Patrol Capitol Security Division, providing security for more than 15,000 workers and thousands of guests who visit the Capitol complex daily. Three members of the State Patrol serve as advisors to the Capital Security Committee. The group is required annually to give a general assessment of the status of State House security, explain implemented improvements, and recommend future plans, all in the name of safety. But the most recent report for 2025 did not appear on this list until just this week. In an email to DPS's Director of Communications dated June 20th, KTDC requested a copy of that report, noting our outreach was prompted by the June 14th shooting deaths of former Minnesota House Speaker Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark, and the shooting injuries of State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette. While awaiting a response about the annual report, it became apparent there was another statutory question over the committee's marching orders. The statute reads, "It shall meet at least quarterly to assess current safety risks in the Capitol area." We took a copy of the legal language to the streets of Rochester, asking voters about the quarterly meeting reference.
It means once every 3 months.
Every 3 months.
Do you agree?
Four times a year, yep.
But the definition of quarterly is not being met through the own admission of the committee put in charge of Capitol Security. Meeting dates are listed in those required yearly reports. Committee members met twice in 2019, three times in 2020 and 2021, twice in 2022, and just once in 2023. As for 2024, they met twice, once in January, once in September. If that's not happening, do you think that's a problem if they're not meeting four times a year?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they need to meet probably more than that.
Is that concerning?
It should be.
Back to those two meetings from 2024, that information came from the committee's 2025 report, which KTDC finally received a copy of on July 15th after six emails to the public safety press team. The department's deputy communications director, writing in part, quote, "We know how critical it is to have open, informed conversations about Capitol security." The 2025 report was listed as an action item for the committee's April 25th meeting. According to DPS, it was approved. To KTTC's questions about statutorily required quarterly meetings now, they went unanswered by DPS. So we inquired with the governor's office, which also handles press for the lieutenant governor as well. Again, Peggy Flanagan chairs this committee. We're still awaiting a response. A spokesperson for Chief Justice Natalie Hudson referred us to the governor's office for comment, and we haven't heard anything from the two state senators and two state representatives on the committee, none of whom are from southeast Minnesota. On June 16th, 2 days after the shootings, the four lawmakers did issue a joint public statement saying in part, quote, "This horrific act of political violence highlights the vital importance of our continued diligence to ensure that members of the legislature, staff, those that work in state government, and the public are safe." Federal investigators.
That was an excerpt from a story from KTTC in Rochester, Brock Berge, highlighting how Capitol security has not improved, how the committee has not been meeting, and I think highlighting how public officials aren't even answering questions from reporters. I think that's going to stay a major issue in 2026. I think it's going to impact who runs for office at the legislative level. I would anticipate significant retirements and more. The second story is the idea that the DFL has now decided to embrace the DSA. And what does that mean for 2026 as well? I think when you think about the DFL going for the left, just like Republicans go further to the right, they alienate independent voters. There's also, I believe, a challenge for Democrats to explain kind of their economic policy if the socialists are part of their party. Last week, DFL party chair Richard Carlbaum said they should be welcome. They're part of the big tent. In many ways, they need them to win statewide, and they would be hurt if they had their own party. But ultimately, it could become a liability next year. Omar Fateh's candidacy for mayor may prove to be one of those pieces. Fateh was supposed to be on the show this week, but we have to reschedule. The open House District 2 race is a third story to watch for next year. Eric Pratt, who's joining the show, and we'll have Tyler Kistner on, and we'll have Matt Klein, and we'll have Matt Little on. They're all vying for this open seat, which Angie Craig has dominated the last election, but it could be a swing seat, depending on what the farm economy is, how suburbanites are feeling, the popularity of Donald Trump. Watch to see how these candidates run. We'll ask Pratt about it, but it'll definitely give us something to watch. The Housing Stability Fund fraud is the next one. This seems to be the one that has prompted lawmakers and the Walz administration to realize there's more and more of a problem here. Some of the numbers in that story are just phenomenal and unbelievable how much this program has grown. And now you had FBI raids on some of the providers, very similar to the raids on autism centers, and some common addresses too. Fraud, while not a hot topic, could become the kryptonite for the DFL and for Governor Walz. Governor Walz deciding whether or not to run is the fifth story to watch for next year, because he's now said it will happen after the state fair. He will be invited on the porch at the state fair for a conversation. And I'm hoping he agrees to come on the Sunday Take after a couple years of not doing it. But as you think about next year, if Walz doesn't run, or if he does run, the tone of the campaign will determine much of the tone of the election. Regardless of Trump's popularity, Republicans coming up with viable candidates, but Walz's attempt to get to a third term will be hindered by the fraud investigation. And on Friday, State Union President, MAPE President, Megan Dayton, further went after Walz, even though they came to a contract agreement. If Walz has trouble with public employee unions, they may recruit a primary challenger within the DFL. Going back to the DSA, if there's primary challengers or endorsement challenges to Walz and a convention battle we know likely between Peggy Flanagan and Angie Craig, DFLers will have contested primaries, and they'll be trying to keep themselves middle enough to win in a general and liberal enough to get that endorsement. We'll continue to watch those issues as we go forward, but I thought they were all worth kind of previewing as we go into this summer. Add to that three new special elections, Nicole Mitchell's resignation finally, and looks like fall is going to be plenty of content and content filled here on the Sunday Take. I'll be live at the fair for both Sundays and hope to see you there. When we come back, we're going to talk to State Senator Eric Pratt. He announced last Monday that he's running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. As a state senator, why would he want to go to Congress, and what does he think he can get done? We'll ask him that next on Sunday Take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My guest this week is State Senator Eric Pratt, and he's from the Prior Lake area. He has served in the Minnesota Senate. He's worked on a lot of business and economic issues. And I kept hearing a little buzz that he might run for Congress, and he announced this last week. He joins the Republican field. And if you think about the 2nd District, it's going to be a very hotly contested race, as I mentioned in my opening comments. And so why would a state senator want to go to Washington? Senator Pratt, thanks for joining me.
Well, thanks, Blois. It's great to be with you again.
So, you know, it's always the question, why are you running? And in this political environment, what is it about Washington that's attractive to you in public service?
You know, I don't know if it's Washington so much as just kind of following my drive to serve in public service anyway. You know, when I joined the school board, the school district was $1 million in debt. Test scores were flat. And while I was on the board, we went from $1 million deficit to a $3 million surplus. Test scores went up, all as we experienced record growth. Moving into the Senate, we were coming out of a deep deficit at the time. And I just kind of looked at it and I said, you know, I think I can help. And now here we are 13 years later. And I think we've got some real issues that we need to tackle, particularly on the economic side, which is where I think my strength is. And I think I can help.
when you think about the Republican Party, obviously Donald Trump's victory has brought more confidence to the party. But this is Minnesota. This is a district that Angie Craig has held. Talk to me about what you hear in the district, why you believe that a Republican can win in the second.
It really comes down to the fact that, for the most part, the families that live in the second hold conservative values. They've been voting Democrat over the last few years. And I think, you know, Representative Craig has done a great job of positioning herself as kind of a moderate in the middle person. But for me, it's really tapping into those issues that affect families, you know, their kids' education. One of the stats that I've seen is kids today don't feel like they can do better than their parents. To me, that is a sign of how much hope and opportunity that we're providing. I want to help change that. You know, even at the state level, I've been watching family budgets over government budgets and being able to do that, making sure we have a vital economy for the job growth. You know, those are all things that I've worked on at the state, and I think I can work on at the federal level. And I think they're issues that are going to represent or resonate with families in the second district.
One of the things that I mentioned earlier in the show, both the DFL and the Republican Party have these different factions. For the DFL, they're experiencing in the mayor's race with the Democratic Socialists. There's kind of this ultra-MAGA movement, anti-globalist movement, within the activist core of the Republican Party. How does that fit into the way you would either represent the district or your own views on the economy? Because Minnesota has obviously benefited from trade, and tariffs are a major topic, and it's built a fair amount of uncertainty for businesses. Where do you stand on the president's tariff strategy and what it would mean to Minnesota for you to be there and serve on a committee like Commerce?
That's a great question, Blois. I think there was a lot of concern when the president originally initiated his tariffs. But as we've seen over the last 4 or 5 months, we've got some really great trade deals that have been inked. In fact, we just finished up two over the last week with China and Japan and the Philippines. And we don't, you know, we always think of Japan, but we don't think of the Philippines as being a key source for our electronic equipment and electronic circuit boards. And so that's a big one for us. The fact that, you know, we have reopened up the ability to get magnets from China. And I've done bills to try to stockpile and protect our supply of pharmaceuticals, particularly those basic pharmaceuticals like antibiotics and insulin, over the years, to make sure that if there is a supply chain disruption, we can weather it. But I think we're starting to see the fruits of the effort, and that the tariffs have worked as a great negotiating motivator.
Talk about spending. Obviously, the big, beautiful bill just passed. It means some cuts to the state. As a legislator, you've probably followed some of those cuts. Are the impacts going to be what the sky is falling, people say, or is there plenty for the state to absorb, or ways in which the state won't feel the impact of, say, Medicaid cuts as much?
Yeah. So, you know, as we look at that bill, I think there's some key parts that we really have to consider, right? And one of them are the tax cuts that average taxpayers receive. It's gonna save the average taxpayer about $10,000 to $11,000 a year. That's how much the standard deduction would have gone up had we not passed that bill. And in some cases, I don't believe we would have received all that tax collection towards the deficit reduction. Now, when you talk about the Medicaid spending, as I've looked into it, most of it is coming from the work requirement, having to put people having to work 20 hours a week or volunteer for 20 hours a week. And when I talk to to average people, they think that's a really common sense idea, that able-bodied people should be out there. As chair of the jobs committee, I've said on many occasions, you know, all work has dignity. And sometimes it's just getting that self-confidence to get somebody back into the workforce. What it means to the state, unfortunately, I've been out of state this week and I missed a couple of meetings, but I'm going to be catching up next week when I'm back in town.
I'm talking to Eric Pratt. He's a state senator. He's running for Congress in the 2nd Congressional District. You are a former school board member. There's obviously some pressure on local school districts right now. There's the state just passed a budget. Are there things that you see in federal spending and how it impacts the state that you want to bring that voice to D.C., how it affects the school district?
There is one in particular that I would like to try to focus on, and that is around special education. When IDEA passed back in the middle 70s, the federal government was supposed to be picking up about 40% of the excess cost of special education. Now, the costs of special education have just spiraled out of control. And one of the things I did at the state level when I was chair of the Education Policy Committee was just try to find some opportunities to rein in that cost driver. And there were we had six simple bills that were able to save hundreds of thousands of dollars and really free up teacher time, because most of our special ed teachers spend their time writing reports than they do working with kids. And then Minnesota, on top of that, adds requirements on top of what the feds require. So that's one I'd like to spend a little more time on if I'm elected to Washington, is really to help out those special ed kids, but also bring some sense to the fact that we need to balance the rights of the special ed kids with the rights of the regular students.
You obviously see the national news. You see the tone out of Washington. I've known you for quite a while. You don't strike me as, you know, the Senate, the personality of President Trump. You've just had one of your colleagues shot and, you know, Speaker Hortman assassinated. Where are we at and how do we tone down the rhetoric? How do we bring some civility back and make sure that we're there, not just is in public service, but also publicly?
Well, that's a really timely question. And one that I've given some thought to, you know, as you said, I hold conservative values, but I try to moderate my rhetoric. I don't try to be the guy who throws a lot of bombs. And quite honestly, I'm a guy that generally avoids, you know, being in the press. But, I do think, you know, we as leaders have to lead by example. But as you mentioned at the top of your show, there's pressure from the far left and there's pressure from the far right that want people who are going to be bombastic. That's not going to be me. I grew up in the corporate world. I worked for a couple of Fortune 100 companies and have learned to work through big organizations in a way that's both respectful, but it helps me, you know, move along the agenda that I want to move along, to push forward the ideas and see success that I would like to see. Some of the projects I pushed in the corporate world are still in place, and I take a lot of pride in that. But I think we also just need average citizens to say enough. Enough is enough. And I think, you know, electing someone like me helps push that message forward, that we don't want the extreme voices. We can, you know, we can be firm and resolute, but we also want people who are going to be logical. You know, I actually left one of my town halls and had somebody who was on the other side say, you know, I thought just based on your social profile that you were going to kind of be a jerk, but you're really pretty reasonable. And I took that as a compliment.
Sounds good. Senator Platt, I know we'll talk more down the line. Thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
I enjoyed it. Thanks, boys.
When we come back, This week's take, it's all about security. I'm Blaise Olson. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. As much as I don't want to talk about security and was trying not to, the series of stories over the last few days tell me that we have to keep highlighting this issue. First and foremost, public service is just that, public service. And whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you aren't feeling safe, you're not going to want to serve. That's why I think there will be major retirements from the legislature next year. And then what kind of candidates will run? But you take this series of stories from KTTC, the Star Tribune, and now the story on Sunday or on Saturday that there was a man found in the Senate chamber on Friday night that was mentally ill and disrobed. When I try to get into the Capitol after hours, it's nearly impossible. So by that standard, it seems to be working. By the other standard, there's still major questions that we're going to have, and we're going to have to answer them. August 20th is the date that the Capitol Security Committee is supposed to meet. I'm anticipating that it will be heavily covered. And I also think that the members of that committee, the legislators, the Chief Justice, and the Lieutenant Governor, are going to have to answer some tough questions. Is there a plan? Why isn't there even a temporary plan? Will the plan be enacted? Earlier this week, they allowed personal security systems at home to be paid for with state resources for legislators. That seems basic. But we have to put metal detectors in the Capitol. We have to start screening people. But we also have to make sure that the Capitol stays open to the public and accessible, that the lobbying community can move. Legislators aren't as accessible since COVID. And so finding this balance is critical. And then my final note is, like that KTTC story, is that could we start answering questions from the press? Legislators are avoiding them. The administration is avoiding them. These are basic questions about the operation of a security committee. And that reporter, Brandon, couldn't get answers. Not no answer. He couldn't get responses. There are people in each of those agencies and the governor's office that their job is to respond to the media. No comment is okay. But on the flip side, engagement and relationship for the Fourth Estate would go a long way to building trust. I'm Blaise Olson. That's Sunday Take. I'll be with Vanita Monday through Thursday. You can always find our content at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's the take.
You want a career that pays? How about $40 to $75 an hour in total compensation, including healthcare, retirement, and getting paid while learning? That's what the Union Building Trades offer. St. Louis is booming with projects, and contractors need the next generation of skilled workers right now. Skip the dead-end jobs. Skip the mountain of student debt. Learn a trade. Earn a paycheck. Build something that matters. Visit mounioncareers.com and start building your future today.
Odyssey celebrates Labor Day. Brought to you by T-Mobile, America's best mobile network according to Ookla speed test. Based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data 1H 2026.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
People say, "I got you," all the time. Dads say it to their kids the first time they ride a bike. Friends say it to other friends when they buy them lunch. It's a good thing when someone's got you. It's especially good when someone's got you with important things like your health. And that's where WeShare's got you. We got you with a massive nationwide network of over 1 million doctors, which means you can likely keep your current doctor you know and trust. We got you with affordable prices that can save individuals up to $5,000 annually compared to traditional insurance, and save families even more. and we've got you with over 68,000 CVS Caremark pharmacies across the country. If you're tired of overpriced health insurance bills, come visit us at WeShareHealth.org or call 1-888-WeShare. Other smart Americans are making the switch every day. In a world filled with companies that cost you, it's nice to have one that's got you. WeShareHealth. We got you.
Did you know that there are over 200 legends like Andrew Jones, Albert Pujols, Felix Hernandez, and Ken Griffey Jr. in MLB The Show 26? Collect them all and current all-stars to build your perfect lineup. MLB The Show 26 is available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.